Coffee and Cream on Hail Varsity Radio with Andrew Rogers and Damon Benning.
You need to know what to do, you know, and we had a lot of miscommunication and misunderstanding. They were getting open looks, especially in the beginning of the game. We have couple on the end of the game too, so you just need to know where to be or what to do, what's the coverage or whatever.
Keep playing basketball as hard as I can, making plays for others, score whenever I get the opportunity to do so, and through all else, just find a way to win. I think we did that tonight as a group, and we'll continue to do that as a group.
That's Nikola Jokic. I almost said up 2-0. Should have been up 2-0.
You like everybody else. You got caught with your hands in the cookie jar.
1-1 is that series.
What's your go-to Miami cookie? Come on, man.
I don't know.
See, then you don't have one.
Sugar, maybe?
Giving it too much thought.
Like, I don't eat, like, cookies on the regular.
That's I don't either. I don't eat a cookie a year, but I still have a go-to.
What's your go-to? Hey,
why are you doing that?
Okay, Joel, I don't need to hear from you just yet.
Oatmeal raisin. And he say, hey, stop laughing. Stop laughing.
Stop laughing.
Oh, man. I just didn't want to be OG and go chocolate chip. I'm not much of a chocolate chip cookie guy.
So then don't think about saying it. It's not fine. That hard.
Why? I like chocolate chip cookie dough. Like, you know, the edible cookie dough?
Joel, as we talk to our guest this week. Do you have a go-to cookie, Joel?
I'm a classic dude. I always rock with chocolate chip, to be honest.
I'm a classic, man.
Hey, because I hesitated.
Why am I not surprised? Mr. Old Soul.
You trying to say I'm predictable?
Never that. Just going classic because you're not gonna overthink it, right? Like I could see. You know what I thought you may say?
For real,
don't say nothing weird, man.
I gotta remember Chicago, right? I was gonna say macadamia.
Nah, that's a little too sweater vest for me. Man.
Snickerdoodle.
Like that feels like a real privilege.
That's going to be my new thing. You seem like a privileged cookie kind of cat. You have no sense. All right. Wow. Privileged cookie. I'm using that.
Hey, my goodness.
Hey, another fantastic deep dive. You got into both, two of the in-state rosters. What made you give Nebraska a look-see? Did you like what they ended up doing? Because I feel like I told this to Drew down last week on paper, and I know they lost D-Walk and Griesel, but I actually feel like Nebraska on paper looks like a more Fred Hoiberg type team.
Yeah, well, I didn't give Nebraska the hardest look. Obviously, that's not my beat, but yeah, I think they're just fine. I like some of their pickup. I like Alex. Obviously, tough to replace some of the uses they lost, but. For where they are and I guess their trajectory, I think they'll be okay. I mean, obviously, they probably overachieved, especially toward the end of last year and kind of that run they went on. But I think they could maybe do similar things, especially getting some of the guys back that got hurt and whatnot. I think they'll be okay.
Joel, one of our questions just in our previous segment was, it was a would you rather, and it was, would you rather be someone that's really good at taking information or really good at teaching information? And in this case, you have Trey Alexander and Call coming back with a lot of information just over the last month and their ability to take feedback and how to now implement some of the things that they learned into next season. So based on their personalities, how much do you think we're going to see some of that feedback come to fruition this season?
I think you'll see it a lot. I mean, obviously, the staff plays a role in that, too, in terms of how willing they are to infuse some of that into the game. And because, I mean, some of this feedback stuff, like, there are scenarios – I mean, I'm not saying that applies to Trey or Ryan, but there are scenarios where certain guys who get that draft feedback that the feedback they do get can be disruptive for the flow of a game, for a college team or whatever. Like, if a team, let's say, wants you to create more or something like that, wants to see you, you know, be capable as a ball handler and, you know, self-creation. Like, that could be disruptive. Now, that wasn't the feedback for either of them, so it'll be less difficult to, you know, see them work some of that stuff in. Obviously, scouts want to see Trey be on the ball more and get in the pick and roll and set guys up, more of that stuff, just showing that he can be more of a combo guard. And so I think that's less difficult, especially with the fit they have now next to Ashworth. And then obviously Kalkbrenner is probably the one that would be more difficult. You probably got to give him a greener light from three, if that's what he's going to show, if he's going to show that he's somewhat of a stretch or at least an improving shooter. I think as it stands, they'll probably have like a yellow light, but but yeah, I don't think it'd be super difficult to work either of them and have that stuff show up in game.
All right, so Drew Down and I got into a little bit of a discussion. Some may call it a debate on the most important guy coming back, and it was between Kalk and Trey, and we both landed on Trey, but for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to one of my other good basketball hoops heads, Jacob Padilla, who didn't mince words. He said, by the way, went back and listened to the pod, you both got it wrong. It's Kalkbrenner. And so he and I were having this discussion literally on an elevator going back and forth. I make the case that the most room for upside and improvement is in Trey Alexander based on what you just described, the ball handling, the creativity. He's playing with a couple of other guys now that can handle the ball too, so he can diversify his game. I would conversely make the case, if Creighton still wants to continue to be good at what they do defensively, Kalk kind of stays the same. He's a drop coverage guy, a rim protector. I don't know how he can expand a ton unless he does get stretchy, but that takes away from his offensive efficiency, which isn't really what you want to do. Am I talking myself into it, or do you agree?
No, I kind of agree with Jacob. Look, I've been thinking about this throughout the week, too, because I think if they would have got just one or the other, like if they would have just ended up with just Kalk or just Trey, like, I think they would be screwed. Like, we couldn't be talking about the ceiling that we're talking about now.
Mm.
But I did see somebody say that Kalk is a floor raiser and Trey is a ceiling raiser. But you can only say that once you have both. Like, with one, we cannot be talking about this ceiling. And so I think with Kalk raising the floor as much as he does, I think he has to be the most important player because he was last year. And just how much of a walking defense he is, was their leading scorer, obviously, due to some of the other guys drawing attention and just putting himself in great position so much of the time, his roll gravity, like he is almost similarly important on both ends. And in terms of a defense, that's the dude that turns. I mean, Creighton is probably not even a top 100 defense if he's on the team.
Well, there's no question, but there's so much tape on him now. Right? Like, do you think everybody's – like, I think they'll space the floor. I think they'll play smaller. I think they'll try the Villanova thing. Like, sometimes because you're so – That's just my case. It's just me, right? I'm like, okay, people know where he's good.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to attack drop coverage. He's got to be able to change his game and come out on the floor and defend a little bit if you want to be able to take advantage of him. Can he adjust in that role is what I'm saying.
Well, your personnel is your personnel. And to be fair, he got Defensive Player of the Year in a Big East 2 years.
No, I understand.
They had tape on him going into last year.
So the numbers support you. They really do. Like, we know they're better with him defensively by far. But do you? Yeah. And I know what you're saying. Your personnel is your personnel. But don't you think coaches, when they get in the lab with teams that want to ISO and ball screen and understand drop coverage, that he may have to change some? Could I make that case?
Yeah, but I think at this level, it's easier for him to switch multiple positions if need be, if he has to be in an end-of-clock situation or, you know, team trying to put him in a tough spot. And it's easier for him to drop, too. We got to remember that it ain't as much space as the NBA. The ball handlers and creators here ain't as creative as the NBA or as talented. He'll be able to slide around just fine, I think. I mean, he'd probably get a third straight defensive player of the year in the Big East, if we're being real. And for what it's worth, like, Trey, with them both, like, I agree that Trey is the ceiling raiser. Like, without him, like he puts that offense over the top now. He gives you a first option probably now, especially off the dribble, end of clock scorer, tough shot maker, ball handler who's going to be in a pick and roll. Like, Trey gives you, like, they I would say they need both probably just as much. But when it comes down to it, like, I got to think Kalkbrenner is probably a smidge more important just on how different that team is. And
I get it. That was kind of his thing, right? He was like, well, with Ash and Baylor, you have more like pieces. There isn't another Kalk on the roster. So I kind of – I mean, in its simplest form, I get it. But I'm talking – and I'm just married to the fact that it's like, okay, that's fine. But you have way more versatility with Trey than you do with Kalk.
Well, if Trey was like this overwhelming like driver and finisher, then I'd probably side with Trey. Because right now, the way I see it, I don't think people are talking about this enough. Ashworth, Trey, and Shireman, and then whoever they're going to have at the four, there's not enough rim pressure there, man.
Yeah, they got to get to the 10. I agree. I completely agree. Somebody, but, yeah. And I think, you know, it's funny, not to go all Jacob Bedillaar, but he said, you know, even with as much pressure as Nembhard put on the rim, he didn't love the fact that he didn't finish enough.
That's true. Yeah, and some of his finishes were short. Like, he had some wacky finishes or missed some close range shots at times, but he got there, man. His craft, his handle, like, he would get there, and the kickouts were there, man. Like, that stuff mattered. And I don't know whether it's the handle or the burst. Some of these dudes, I don't know how they're gonna get to the rim, and I think that's one thing Trey is missing. I think that's part of why the emphasis being a combo guard is there, because right now, like, the burst isn't there to just go to the rim. He's not going to play really above the rim. You know, he has a certain spots, but how easy does he get to them? Like, there are stuff, like, the things that are going to make him a first-round pick, like, there are things for sure that he can work on.
That's interesting. Joel Lorenzi with us now. Creighton Beef for the Omaha World Herald at JX Lorenzi on Twitter. Kind of fit right into my next question a little bit, but it's almost as if you answered it. So I'm going to take it a different direction now. How do you think their experience going through the NBA draft combine will impact their maturity moving forward? So, as different from what they can, what did they take away from it to learn and implement into their game, but more for their maturity as leaders, their maturity in gamesmanship upstairs in their own heads. Like, how do you think that experience impacted them in that way?
Yeah, I think they just they were around. You know, everybody in that process was either the best player or the second best player on their college team or whatever team they played on. So you're just around great players, a lot of which who have their own voice and whatnot. And in those scenarios, to stand out, you got to project your voice. Like, Kalkbrenner was calling out second switches. Like, I think for as much as we saw him maybe be louder this year, I think he even found more of a voice at the combine. It's the only way you can survive. And then with Trey, I think just some of that feedback, I think it's just, and I kind of said it before, but it gives him something to really work for. Like we talked a lot about in his pitches to, you know, to come back to Omaha, how much of a load he'd have to take on offensively. And now, not like he needed an incentive, but now he really has it in front of him. Like, okay, if I want to get drafted, like, I'm going to have to do this stuff anyway. Like, if we want to get far as a team, I'm going to have to do this stuff anyway. So, I think the feedback was necessary, and hearing from it so much, and seeing, you know, what the, not like he looked like the complete opposite of what his feedback was. I mean, he didn't show much of the combo guard stuff that week in Chicago, but seeing the alternatives and seeing, you know, what's missing, I think helped him a ton.
Joel, real quick, getting to the NBA, do the Heat kind of regress back to the means in terms of their shooting? Or are they what they are, and you just continue to let Jokic score and try to stay attached to shooters?
I just can't believe – I cannot believe that the Heat are still pulling stuff off like they did the other day. I just thought it was – bro, and I didn't like Spo's answer in that press conference. Because I didn't think that was the best question he got asked about whether, you know, you could turn Jokic into just a passer or just a scorer. But I didn't like his response because he knew that that wasn't his real – that wasn't really how he felt. I mean, obviously, you respect Jokic, but that wasn't really how he felt.
I do think he wouldn't mind him taking 28 shots, though.
I mean, I don't think that's why he lost, to be honest. Like, it was a factor, sure, but that's not why he lost. I mean, it was small breakdowns down the stretch that I thought helped them lose that lead. Like, I think back to letting Duncan Robinson dribble drive, and Jamal Murray jumping out his briefs out to Duncan Robinson for that three, and he just sidesteps. Like, I could think of a handful of breakdowns that put them out of the game. And that was stuff that, I mean, it felt like Miami was getting advantages that they just didn't have the game before versus, you know, Denver was getting advantages earlier between the cross matches with Aaron Gordon and transition, like,
yeah,
doing stuff that made Miami look helpless. And now Miami got a fighting chance for the Duncan Robinson? Come on, man.
Okay. So – your role players typically play better at home than on the road. Are you over or not? Do you no longer use the term role players with Heat? Is their roster just their roster now?
I don't think so.
Well, I don't want to call them a team of role players. I mean, some of these dudes could start on other teams. Like, I like Caleb Martin to start on a good handful of teams. Gabe Vincent, I think, could be a starter in a lot of places. But it does seem like their core is so role player-ish, man. Like, and for what it's worth, they got good ones, man. Like, I think a lot of those dudes are similarly talented, even if they have different skill sets. Like, they're similarly talented, which helps them. So there's not a huge drop off from player to player once you get to, like, I don't know, the fourth, fifth guy, maybe even third, really, if Caleb Martin is the third option.
Joel, who do you think is getting the most attention during this playoff run? Would you say it's Miami and the inexplicable effort that they put forth every night, the team that puts the skeptics to shame, or the Nuggets, who have arguably been the best team all year, has the lineup of names to prove it, but doesn't get talked about near enough because they aren't the cool, special story?
Okay, ask the first part of your question.
The first part just was simple. Who do you think is getting the most attention nationally during this playoff run?
Oh, geez. I'm not sure either are getting their due. Maybe I think the individuals like Jokic and Jimmy probably are getting enough attention. But
that's fair.
As for each team, I don't know. I mean, this has felt like, based on coverage and even like, this is a separate issue, but like the on-court look, like it feels less like a finals than ever before. And I don't think that's based on talent or the teams. I think it's based on the coverage, the way, networks and writers are covering this series. It feels different than recent years. And then, like, my issue was the on-court look. And I've seen a few people kind of back this, too. I think Tyrese Halliburton tweeted it out. Like, yo, they need to put Delarry O'Brien in the middle of the floor. They got to do their thing with the ESPN ABC graphic for the scoreboard. Like, it doesn't look like a final series. It looks like I'm watching the conference finals. I mean, what happened to all the finals nostalgia, bro? Like, the stuff that lets you know, like, hey, you're watching the finals. Like, it feels absent.
Do you know what that is, though? I think they fell victim to how they felt the series was going to go. They may wake up and this thing's at game seven, and they didn't treat it the way that they were supposed to.
Thinking as if the Nuggets were supposed to win.
Yeah, we were referencing Father MC earlier. Treat them like they want to be treated. I think even the crews, especially if Miami wins this next one and they go up 2-1, then all of a sudden they may have to recommit some finances. Better send some more folks to cover this thing, right? Because I'm with you. It seemed like an afterthought until it's actually happened. Or is it this, Joel? Let me ask you this because you're a hoops head. Is it because TNT is so much better than ABC, ESPN?
Well, I don't want to cut myself out of a job here. I'll say this. TNT, bro, I prefer
I'm done.
ESPN crew over TNT. Because they serve different purposes. TNT will entertain you, and they also have Reggie Miller, but ESPN is more like, I guess, informative. Well, no, ESPN has come down to entertainment now too. But I think their play by players will really inform you more. I think TNT is like in terms of entertainment, they're better. But I don't know if I could say either. I don't know. Maybe I'll point to ESPN instead of TNT. I don't think TNT, if they are better, I don't think it's overwhelming enough to where I have to agree with you.
I primarily say that because that's all TNT does. You know, obviously ESPN, ABC, they got to diversify the portfolio, mm-hmm. right? Like, but TNT, like that, the NBA is what they do.
What do you mean? What, entertain or?
No, like they don't have anything else to really worry about. They cover
TNT?
Basketball. Oh, yeah.
NHL right. during the playoffs,
you
and
know,
that's about it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I don't know. I try to go like talent for talent, like Rose and Perk and like Richard Jefferson and those guys versus like Kenny, Shaq, Charles. I don't know. The entertainment thing versus willingness to speak out, I think, might be something different, too. Maybe Perk belongs on TNT. I don't know.
Maybe.
I think they got enough knuckleheads over
there. Yeah, I'm not a Perk guy.
And we have enough knuckleheads on this show, too.
I'm not a Perk guy either. That's code for what Joel said.
Joel, man, enjoy the rest of the day. We appreciate you hopping on. We'll talk again next week.
Yes, sir. Talk soon.
More TNT next.